Thursday to you. Welcome to the People's Show, coming to you live from the Kintec Studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. It's Bic here in the studio. Behind the glass, Ben running the show. Costa running the show. You can be part of it as well. 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Dunbar Lumber, three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street. Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com. Get those text messages in. You can also pick up a phone line, 604-280-0650, 1-888-275-0650. Something on your mind? You want to talk about Game 3? Still feeling the bruise from Game 2? You want to talk about that? You can give us a ring, 604-280-0650. We'll use those numbers. We'll use the phone line, at least, to call Ian McIntyre later on in the show. The Triple Threat from radiotelevision.ca. You read them on digital. He will join us in the second half of the show. Ken Priestley coming up in about 15 minutes. Former NHLer, two-time Cup champion, will join us. Our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber in about 15 minutes. We'll chat about the NFL draft as well. Happy draft day. Did you watch draft day last night? Costa, Ben, you guys, Kevin Costner? Was that on your TVs last night?
Did not.
Come on.
I watched some TikTok clips on it.
There you go.
Is that
competing.
A tradition for you?
Hell yeah, it is. Really? It's so bad. It's good. It's a must watch the evening of the draft.
It's the best too, just for Kevin Costner's freakouts.
It's like, yeah, there's so many plot holes. There's so many mistakes. There's so many it's charming how bad it is, but you kind of have to watch it. You kind of just got to watch it. Have you ever seen it, Ben?
Of course.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to make sure.
Jennifer Gardner's in it. Of course.
Okay. Sorry. I wasn't aware you had like a carry with you laminate list or something like
that.
Now everybody knows. Hey, she might be filming in town. Who knows? Kevin James is in town. Maybe Jen Garner's in town. You never know. Here in Hollywood North. We'll touch on the NFL draft a bit as well. 650, first text in. So glad we avoided Vegas. We would have been swept. Oh boy! Things heating up in Dallas, or I guess the series switches to Vegas. Things heating up as always to start the show. We do it with the tea. All right, what do we got, Ben?
We're going to start with Tyler Myers. Back on the ice, was battling the flu.
Who amongst us, right?
Everybody.
Everybody in the lower mainland.
Everybody's got it.
Like, if you didn't get it, you know someone that did.
I know you.
Hey, real talk. Although, I'm not even convinced I had a flu, whatever it was. I was struck down by a plague unknown to mankind.
But Tyler Myers is back and healthy.
Back on the ice, met with media, so that's a fantastic sign. But was skating again with Carson Soucy. So the Twin Towers reunited with Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers. Fantastic sign, obviously. He played so well in Game 1. And there was criticisms about Noah Juulsen's play. I didn't mind Noah Juulsen's game as much as some others have pointed out. Obviously, the penalties stand out. But by and large, I thought Noah Juulsen kind of held his own. In a game where the Canucks, look, every play, Noah Juulsen was far from a reason the Canucks lost that game. It comes down to what they did on the offensive side of the ice. But Tyler Myers, look, he's going to restake his claim back in the lineup. And he played so well in Game 1. And, you know, the thing that was interesting is the minute distribution that happened in Game 2 versus what happened in Game 1. Now, obviously, the score plays a big role in this. You were able to come back in that game, and it was just tight. You're down 3-0. Obviously, Quinn Hughes is going to start getting a lot more minutes in that situation than he did in Game 1, where he chalks up 22 minutes. You go through Game 2, Quinn Hughes sitting there at 27, 29. That's a TV episode right there with a commercial break. And then you look at, you know, Noah Juulsen, it's 11:24. So the spectrum is 16 minutes, whereas the other day, Game 1, it was 3 minutes. So you can see what the value of what Tyler Myers brings, just being able to get to that 19-minute mark. But yeah, good sign. Tyler Myers back on the ice.
Elias Lindholm on the power play. Connor Garland had that role for a long time. You know, what do you think about it? And this power play has been struggling.
So
for the first two games,
part of me is like, all right, like, look, he's a naturally more productive player, like at his peak. That's what Lindholm can do, and it makes the most sense. Get your five best guys out there. And the other part of me wonders, there's this insistence on creating that, like, traffic goals, and they're valuable, but right now it's like it hasn't worked so far through two games because they've struggled to get pucks on net through two games. It's not just game two. That was a big storyline in game one, too. They end up winning, and the atmosphere and that comeback in 12 seconds kind of overshadowed that. It's not as if the Preds didn't block a lot of shots in game one. And now I just wonder, it's like, you stick another body in front of there, you're like, hey, this guy's good at tipping the pucks, he battles in front of the net, he does all those things, and is it solving the problem of creating space and finding areas? Now, at the same time, you know who's really good at tipping pucks? Is Elias Lindholm. So,
right,
it feels like a double-edged sword. You're kind of attacking the problem with someone who can battle and get those tips, but are you also sending more pucks into spots where the Preds are going to block shots?
So that was my thing, is are you not maybe compounding the issue a little bit here by sending more bodies to the front
potentially,
of the net? Where potentially. Where defender's also going to be there?
But
this just seems like you're making the problem worse by putting more bodies there.
Now, look, I've been sitting here advocating for trying to create below the goal line as well. On the power play, that's certainly an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Can Lindholm on that? He's fantastic along the walls. Certainly Garland was as well. But is there a way to generate offense from hashes down rather than point?
So we had Brendan Morrison on the Canucks Talk a couple hours ago, and he was talking about how to really try to beat this type of defense, moving the puck east-west is actually how you do this, and getting those seam passes.
Well, the thing is, they connected on the seam passes, right? Like, and that's what was so funny about game two, is it'd be one thing if they kept trying it and it kept getting deflected, and they routinely hit two seam passes on the same play. And we know, like, statistically, you cross that slot line, the imaginary line, Royal Road, or whatever you want to call it, that's 60% more likely to score a goal. They just didn't get the next shot through or on net or whatever it was. So they're hitting the seam passes. But to your point of what BMO was talking about, you know, the thing I would like to see is from the boards and from the hashes down, create it from that side. Because the term du jour of this series so far is fronting.
Right.
Like we're listening to Pharrell all over again, fronting here.
So were you kind of alluding to also like the way Joshua scored his goal?
Yeah.
In the first game, right?
The way Joshua did it.
Forecheck, and then Garland gets the puck. We're below the hash marks, and then he centers it out front. Joshua's there. Bingo.
The way Suter scored that goal, right? That starts from below the goal line,
right?
And it's quick, and who kind of sneaks in behind as the Preds are forced to expand from this collapse?
Right.
It's P.U. Suter. Just subtly in there, uncontested. Shot gets through now, but he tips that one. Canucks are on the board.
It's almost like they're building this nucleus in the middle of the ice, and you want to kind of expand that out.
But if they're going to get ahead of a layer, just satellite it. Very simplified version of what I'm talking about here, but...
Well, so many times I think we've got a lot of texts in.
Yeah.
A lot of people have asked us, you know, what does fronting mean? Like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm. Classic basketball term.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't always mean they can box out then. So the way to beat that is you got to just pass the ball in basketball quickly, or cut backdoor, theoretically, in basketball. And in hockey, you just have to move the puck side to side as fast as possible and be ready to shoot. You know, one-timers, I think, you know, they're kind of going away a little bit, but we know Elias Pettersson has a one-timer. And I think players need to be ready to use that weapon.
What else we got?
The series villain.
Yeah, something Rick Tocchet mentioned. I saw Jamie Dodd on the...
Embracing the role of the villain.
Yeah.
Which is not a normal thing maybe for Vancouver.
So this is the thing I'm really excited to watch, because I think Tocchet was mentioning more of the team mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a couple of players, because I do think it's been budding a little bit for Dakota Joshua, and it's one thing to do it in your own barn. You go into the other barn, because he's thrown a lot of hits and he's done a lot of extra stuff, and you know, there have been pre-faceoff scrambles with he's the one chirping. I wonder if he's going to emerge through game three and game four as like Nashville's version of what Vancouver is faced with, a Michael Ferland or a Dustin Byfuglien. Like, just the guy in front of the net who's impossible to move.
Mm-hmm.
He just rocks bodies along the boards. And look, he had a big celly in game one. It was a big moment, obviously, and the crowd was jumping. But the big arm wave.
Oh, yeah.
You do that in the other barn. Oh man, that section is pointing at you, and they are furious.
It's going to ruffle some feathers.
Yeah. But if he's been the best Canucks winger so far.
Mm-hmm.
If he's the one that does it, then that's the one I'm looking at.
I like that one.
Yeah.
But I think
Zadorov.
Nikita Zadorov.
Yeah.
That's one that stands out for me.
Dresses like a Bond villain.
He's had some seriously big hits this year. If you're laying out guys on the road, that's going to draw some attention.
I will say, too, Joshua had a moment where he tried taking on Lauzon on his own entry,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of collided. And Lauzon, to his credit, kind of chucked him into the corner.
Stood his ground.
Oh, yeah. And it looked like Pronger Bufflin.
Yeah.
Just like that level of violence.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, that was a big boy moment.
I'm excited to see what comes of this, though.
Yeah, I'm pumped up.
On a sad note, this morning, sad news across the hockey world, across the sports world.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Cole passed away. Maybe just share your thoughts on that and the memory you have.
The first thing that always comes out in my mind that you hear the name Bob Cole is, you know, for me, I'm sure other people have their favorite calls, is Joe Sakic, 5-2, right? Like, that's the one that always stands out to my head because it was so tense. And even Canada's up 4-2, you know, a couple of minutes to go, and you're thinking, like, yeah, they got this. But that moment, there was so much pressure on the country, man. Go just get this result. And coming off Nagano and all this, and you're just like, it could still flip. It could still flip. And even the save Brett Hull or Brodeur makes on Brett Hull, you think that's the key moment. And you just wanted that last little release. And surely that's got to be it. Like, that one to me is the thing. I'm not going to do a Bob Cole impression,
mm-hmm.
but like, that to me is the one that always stands out. Like, that closing moment and the whole Joe Sakic up the ice and the way he said, like, that's the thing that's always fresh in my head.
The way he said Sakic.
Yeah. And Joe, right? Like, the Eagles before the O. It was just fantastic. And, you know, you aspire for moments like that when you get into broadcasting for a lot of people. And it's, you know, some people got it, man. Some people just have the perfect immersion to blend in the moment, the crowd, and their own talent.
Mm-hmm.
And when the talent shines as brightly as it does, it resonates with a lot of people.
He made an impact on a lot of people in a lot of different industries. So it's a sad loss, and condolences to his family. We're going to end the tea with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Does Toronto need to be more serious? You know, the city,
okay.
the team, like what's going on?
What really stood out to me yesterday is, look, they lose the game, right? They're familiar with losing playoff games.
Oh.
But the reaction from, like, media afterwards, a lot of people called out the fans immediately after that game. It's not a unusual comment about what that barn feels like. It can be stuffy. It can be corporate during the regular season. Not unfamiliar things have been said about Rogers Arena, but those things get cast aside when people see what happens in game one. And people say, boy, that looks like a fun place to be. Winnipeg, right? Like, across Canada, in key moments, a lot of rinks rise to the moment. And it's been said a couple of times about Toronto that come playoff time, it doesn't happen. But it was bizarre to me that yesterday, that was the first comment.
So I'm driving back from work, and Joe Bowen on the radio says, as the third period starting, well, there's nobody in the platinum seats. I guess they're still drinking their wine spritzers. And he said, this is quite embarrassing.
Yeah.
And he called out the Maple Leafs fans on the air and said,
During
the beginning of the third period. And said, this is embarrassing. And the Bruins scored, I think, a minute and a half into the third period. And Joe Bowen was just, he was beside himself about that. And he was very, very noticeably, like, upset about how, I think he said, behind the Leafs bench, it's a ghost town. This is embarrassing. That's very telling.
So, all the commentary, right? They're not wrong. Okay? It was noticeably quiet. But I almost just feel like the fans got bullseyes on them because there's not much else to say about what's happened in Toronto. What are you going to say? Like, hey, Mitch Marner's soft in the playoffs. You've been saying that for 4 years. He had a bunch of turnovers yesterday. So re-pointing that out isn't necessarily a fresh take. Going after the officials, they've done that. They've done that. And Sheldon Keefe kind of tried playing that card a little bit in a somewhat clever way, putting Brad Marchand in the crosshairs a bit. They've done that. Oh, the goaltending? Guess what? They've seen half a dozen goalies over the past 11 years. That's a lot. You can't just put up another name instead of Freddie Anderson, Wohl, Samsonov, Campbell, Reimer. They've gone through their fair share. Even saying the goalies is not even a new thing. Oh, the depth of the defense. They've gone after the Jay Gardners of the world, the TJ Brodies, whoever. They've found guys, and it's like they ran out of options yesterday on their first home game of the series, and it's like, ah, let's just go after the fans. Unbelievable, I thought. Unbelievable. They've just seen the same movie over and over again. And even after game two, I was talking with Yannick, and I just thought, yeah, okay, look, they got a good win. It was Matthews' fantastic game for him, but I feel like I've seen this movie before.
And he goes pointless last night.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like there's any good options for anybody there. And it seems like it's heading to a massive full reset
Marner
at some point.
Marner makes one good pass. To his credit, he makes a great pass.
It was an unbelievable pass, too.
And yeah. He's like, oh, he's back. It's so.
And then the rest of the game, it's like, I tuned in and out, watching some other games, doing some other stuff, watching draft day. And I tuned in, and I was like, man, I've seen him turn the puck over 4 or 5 times at the blue line. It's rough.
It's the same movie, like you said.
I can't believe it. All right, let's talk to our good friend, Ken Priestley, former NHLer, 2-time Cup champion, our Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber. Ken, how are you?
Not bad. Yourself?
I'm good. Actually, we love talking about the Canucks, but do you recall anything like this Leafs team? It's so bizarre. They always get so much attention, but show me something different.
Yeah, it is tough, isn't it? Like I got in the Dunbar Lumber world, we have so many Leafs fans, so many Canuck fans, so many different NHL team fans. They're all fired up about this playoff runs that their teams are going to happen. But the most entertaining people are the Leaf fans because they come in and one day they're just down and out. Sell the farm, do whatever it is, get rid of them. The next day, they come back with a win, and they're going to win the cup. And then the next day, they do. It kind of is the same thing, but they're entertaining at best, right? Like they really are entertaining their fans, and their team is just they're having a tough go at it. They're just the consistency that they are lacking in game in game out is just not there. And you know, hopefully they can sort it out, but if they can't, it'll be a short one.
Well, what's strange is, like, I think even the biggest skeptic or the biggest Leafs hater would say, like, look, they have an obvious upside. Like, there are teams that go 2 rounds frequently and miss out. Like, the Minnesota Wild have been very successful making the playoffs over the past 11 years, but they don't make it past the second round. But there's no really upside to that team. We don't see a, you know, Stanley Cup talk about way for the Minnesota Wild, but the Leafs, like, they have a near 70 goal scorer and they have all these guys, and you think at some point you'd break through.
Oh, at some point for sure. I mean, they have a team. They're extremely skilled, and they have a team that you would think would be perfect for a long run in the playoffs. Again, I think they are short in a couple of different positions. I think they're fragile at goaltending position.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the game that they were playing, for the third one here, that I thought the first goal that Samsonov let in was kind of a backbreaker for the team, because they just looked so deflated after that went in. Like, it was a 0-0 game or a 1-0 game, and everything was going well. And all of a sudden he gets a low blocker, kind of a snapshot from a guy that I don't know is going to score many goals in the playoffs. He's going to be a contributor in the physical side of it. But if Frederick's going to get you a goal, you would think that it would be banging it in from the front of the net on a scramble, but not something just coming down the wing and snapping at a low blocker. They get deflated so quickly, and their whole psyche, their whole team psyche just looks so fragile at the moment without Nylander there and without Marner going, and you know, and just their shortcomings are just so present at the moment that it's very, very hard to come back from stuff like that, because in the playoffs you just want consistency. You don't want any problems. You want everything to go according to plan, and if it doesn't, Sometimes these fragile teams, even though multi-talented teams, they just can't finish the job.
Was there a team like that in the East when you were playing? My you know, I was really young. My memory is a bit hazy on that because I feel like there was a lot of changeover about some teams making a run. Like obviously the Islanders have a run, and I feel like the Capitals had a bit of a run there, at least getting to the third round. Was there a team like maybe you'd look at it and say like, yeah, they had a good season, but we'll see in the playoffs and see what happens.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, being an ex-player and all that kind of stuff, that type of a thing never really crossed my mind. You know, everybody gets to the playoffs. The regular season is the regular season. But once you get to the playoffs, anybody can beat anybody. And you just can't count any team out because the level of intensity goes up. The fierceness of the game goes up. And sometimes really good teams, you know, maybe the Toronto Maple Leafs just can't get to that next level. And, you know, Buffalo, we were at times, we were really, really good teams in the regular season. But when it came down to playoffs, the Montreal Canadiens always had our number, right? They just were more experienced. They knew how to win the tight games. And for some reason, we just couldn't get over that hump. In Pittsburgh, obviously, the level of talent that those teams had, very, very, very fortunate that there was a whole two playoff seasons there where there was very limited injuries. And you were so consistent with the lineup that you were sending out there. You were our main guys were always in the lineup. You know, I think we went down one time with a goalie problem. And the next guy up was Frank Pietrangelo. He came in for one game, stood on his head in New Jersey. You know, I think it was the sixth game. And for just making the saves that he made gave the belief to the team that just because Tommy's not in the net at the moment, this guy's going to win us a game and we're going to get back to Pittsburgh and win game seven. So there was very limited times where they ever felt like they were in trouble. We were always able to figure out a way to bounce back. And I think that's why they were so successful. There was just very, very limited distractions and it was just one way and one way only. And they were focused and, you know, history is history.
So as you mentioned a moment there, obviously with your own goalie, a scenario that develops in the playoffs, Canucks obviously going through that. You know, what's funny about that is that they kind of played it perfectly in game two. Like they carried the play, overwhelming shot attempts to the point that goaltending wasn't really a, you know, storyline in that game. So from style of play and confidence in how they would carry it over with the goalie change, they actually did that part, but they don't get the result, and the struggles are on the offensive end. What did you notice from game two?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think the vibe was incredible again for game two, right? The fans are behind Casey, the fans are behind the team, everybody's fired up, and then it's a break. It's the first goal that went in. It was just a total fluke, a total shot from the point, misdirection, goes into, you know, the open net where everybody's sliding to the left, and it's just one of those types of goals. They're backbreakers. They really are. And it doesn't allow the team to get settled. I mean, the fans were fired up. The team was physical. They were taking the play to them, but they couldn't get that first break. And the first break went against them. And now with your, you know, with they just squeeze the sticks a little tighter. But again, it's the playoffs. They're tied one game apiece. They're going back to Nashville. They win one there. They're back to home ice advantage, right? It's the playoffs. It's the breaks. And right now, both teams got breaks, and we're tied 1-1.
Hey, you're a coach, very successful, three-peat going on there with your kids. How would you work around these shot-blocking preds?
You know what? I mean, it's tough. There's no question about it. I mean, the puck has to move faster than they do. You know what? One going back to the second game there, that one missed chance by Pettersson at the end of the first period there to make it 2-1. I think was another massive turning point in the game where I think that you get a goal right at the end of the period like that, and it's your star player who's having a little struggle. He gets back on the board. Everybody feels a little bit different, and maybe the second period turns into something different. But you know, how I would do things about shot blocking and all that kind of stuff is, again, you just have to be very, very well, very, very good at making passes. You know, you got to change directions, east, west, north, south. You got to move the puck faster than they are thinking. And it's tough when you got somebody in front of you all the time and all they want to do is block shots. But you have to find a way. And then you have, once they get through, you have to find the traffic in front and bang home in the rebounds.
I always appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk soon. And hopefully, you know, we see the Canucks pull this off. Because if we talk next week, it's going to be game six potentially.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a long series.
All right, appreciate it.
Take care.
It's Ken Priestley, two-time Cup champion, Stanley Cup champion, former NHLer, or Mr. Fix-It from Dunbar Lumber. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by All Seasons Roofing, sun, rain, wind, or snow. I know it's April, but or snow. All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. On the other side, Ian McIntyre will talk about the NFL draft as well. Going tonight, about 90 minutes away. Caleb Williams going first overall. We'll get into it all on the other side. Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.